Welcome back to Camrose Conversations with your host, Colin Campbell. And today is episode 229 of the podcast. And as is customary, every 10 episodes and the ones ending in a 9, it is a solo Q&A with questions sent in by you guys on Instagram and over my email list. During this, I'm answering 27 questions, and these include my thoughts on sales skills, deathbed regrets, networking tools that are underrated, saying no, my favorite 3 episodes from other podcast shows I've listened to, and I also share all my financial investments for 2024, including a brand new asset class I've just started investing in for the first time. The podcast has been flying, and I do not say that lightly. So thank you so much to you if you have been sharing and supporting the show, leaving ratings, subscribing, passing the episodes on to friends. We're heading in the right direction, and I cannot thank you enough. And with that in mind, if you are enjoying today's episode, or if there's one that you've listened to recently that you haven't shared yet with somebody, please do copy and paste that link and send it across to them and tell them that they need to get involved here. The last thing I'm going to mention before we dive into this full episode is that my podcast masterclass video course is still live, and I have an incredible number of students that are now out there sharing the first podcast episodes that they have created off the back of doing the course. The first 3 podcasts are out there now, and it's been amazing to see somebody go from the concept and the idea and the dream of starting a podcast all the way through to starting and releasing their first episode with interesting guests. Podcasting is not an easy task. It is certainly not. The vast majority of podcasts fail. Over 90% don't go beyond episode 3, and a further 9% fail after 10 episodes. So there is not a very easy way to do this, but I have managed to build out a 54 video, 9 module course, which takes you through the entire process, covers this, the nuts and the bolts, things like software, equipment, the different things that you can use to map out your podcast. But more importantly, we cover things like guest management, approaching and securing the best people in your niche, and of course, marketing and getting the podcast out there to the maximum number of eyes and ears that you possibly can. The link will be in the show notes to enroll at mypodcastmasterclass.thinkific.com. But that is quite enough from me. In this introduction, you have 27 interesting questions to be answered, and I know you guys really enjoy the solo episode, so thank you so much for your continued support. The music's going to play, and we'll get right into this one now. Back with another solo Q&A. It has been a while since I've done one of these. It would have been the start of December, end of November, before I went on holiday to Dubai. So the first one of the year to kick off. It's a Saturday night. I'm back from the football. Rangers doing well. So sorry to all my Celtic supporting listeners and friends, but I'm in a good mood because of that. And with this episode releasing tomorrow, there's a little bit of pressure to get it out there and get it released, but I am genuinely looking forward to answering some of these questions. There's some absolute belters in here on topics that I'm excited to talk about. So let's get right into it. Question number 1, how do you work out how much to invest in yourself and growth versus cash, stocks and assets? I previously had a bias towards stacking cash and assets, and I really believe that building the habit of saving money and then investing it on a regular basis is really fundamental and a very, very good skill. But I want to share a lesson I learned from Nick Majuli, which I just cannot get out of my head when it comes to a question like this. And he wrote an investment book called Just Keep Buying, and I was lucky to have him on the podcast back in 2022 on episode 137. Nick shared that what you earn and scaling your income is what matters most. And he gave an example of if you invested £500 on a monthly basis, which is no mean feat and is a really positive trait, that's £6,000 annually. You may spend that time looking for a particular stock or fund or asset to invest in that may get you 10%. If you'd invested in the S&P over the last 20 odd years, it's averaged out at a 10% return on an annual basis. That's great. 10% of £6,000 is £600. And he explained that if you picked up a few shifts at your friend's bar or doing some labouring, whatever it was, you could quite quickly earn £600 more rather than earning £600 from your investments or on top of your investments. So based on that, really what you should be focusing on is how much can you earn fiscally to enable you to move that £500 to £1,000 to £1,500 and really have more weight to put into the market on a regular basis. Because if, for example, £500 is 15, 20, 30, 40% of your post-tax salary that's available after you spend on all your other living expenses, if we can start to move that number up, that's really important. And the only way you can do that is through upskilling and investing in yourself and the growth that you're going to be capable of. Alongside that, I'm going to say that based on the people that I've spoken to across the podcast that are personal finance experts and have some really strong insights, aiming for 10% of your post-tax salary invested into assets is a really good target to have, while building an emergency fund of cash for your living expenses for up to 6 months, should anything happen with your main income stream, your injury, or something happens in the family. You want to have your mortgage or your rent, your car payments, and your food payments basically covered for 6 months. And that's a really positive thing to do. But investments in yourself, those are what are really going to move things forward. So making sure that there isn't too much of a bias towards just investing in stocks, assets, and cash. Because if you're maybe limiting your ability to invest in something like a course or a mentor or even experiences and events that would open up your mind and your skill set to greater growth, then you may be limiting yourself for the longer term. And I think there's been times when I've done that. I've experienced a lot of excellent training through different employers that I've had over the years in the sales space. But could have I invested in more mentors and coaches to get me to where I am faster in some of the other facets of my life? Undoubtedly. And I probably had a bias towards stacking more cash for my mortgage or stacking more cash for investing into the stock market or into crypto. So I really, really think that don't err too much on the side of cash assets. Instead, focus on making sure that you're giving yourself the best possible chance to be a high earner, whether that's in your business or whether that's in your career, as soon and as fast and as powerfully as possible. Question number two, not a question, but I would love to hear more about your sales career and advice. I screenshotted your three lessons story and it really helped me immediately, especially talking about actions. I'm happy to do more of this in terms of talking about my sales career and what I do in that space. If you give me more specific questions about my role or about things that I think about sales, that will help me share what's useful to you rather than just talking about it in general. But for starters, the three lessons story that I screenshotted, you screenshotted and I shared, it must have been a couple of weeks ago now, that was mainly focusing on three different things that I think about on a regular basis after working in sales for almost a decade now. And the first of those was, your meetings are only as good as your follow-ups. Send the agreed actions to all parties, including deadlines and expectations. And I would also add for you to put some reminders in your calendar to follow up on those deadlines to make sure that those things are working in progress, because you can have this amazing first meeting or second meeting or pitch meeting, and then the things that you agreed might never happen if you don't do the follow-up, if you don't get it in writing, if you don't remind people. Secondly, know your product and service to an expert level. It creates trust. You can always go away and check the finer details about a very niche question somebody's got, but you should have most of the answers on the day without deferring to others on a regular basis. I trust and buy into the people that can tell me things about what they offer me rather than being like, hold on, let me ask James in accounts, or let me ask James in product, or Sarah in HR, whatever it is. Make sure that you're able to show a level of expertise, because somebody's much more likely to buy from you if they feel that you know what you're talking about. And lastly, understand the sign-off process for the deal that you're working on. Who else needs to be involved? Who needs to be informed to make this decision? Don't pitch at the wrong level. Sometimes you might be pitching at a really low level in terms, you might be dealing with like a manager or somebody who's overseeing a particular project, but guess what? It's the MD, the finance director, the CEO that's signing this off. So make sure that they are involved in the process and they know who you are, they know what you're bringing forward. And it's not a case of you selling really well to this one particular person, and then guess what? When it's time to sign off on the contract, you lose all power, and the person that you've been speaking to is the one that's doing the pitching up the chain, and they're never going to do as good a job as you. Now, these are all lessons that I've gathered from, I worked this out. I started working full-time in sales in 2014. I've got so many more that I've been thinking about. And over the last 15 months, I've been doing sales consultancy for individuals, but mostly for teams for B2B. And I really think that for both businesses and individuals, leveling up your sales ability is really tangible and really easy, because overall, the standard of sales in the world, and in particular in the corporate world, is really poor. So there's loads of things that you can do. So yeah, more than happy to talk more about this on a regular basis. And if I get more specific questions, that will definitely help me in that respect. Question number three, you said the podcast grew 20% in December. What's the secret to that? No secret, but for starters, I took the podcast to Dubai during December, and that definitely helped, because I booked three guests who were recorded in person that performed better than a remote recorded one. So Marcus Hussle, Adam Power, and of course I had an author and a speaker who's really well known and respected in the business world, and Daniel Priestley. And because those were recorded in person, they performed better on YouTube, and those guests were more excited about sharing the podcast because it was such a good conversation in person. You had the ambiance and the imagery of the studio, which adds a level of authority to the pod, and that really helped. Alongside that, in Dubai, we also had the Crypto Glasgow boys on for a fifth time on the show, and we used an incredible studio in Dubai called Podster, and it was a time when people really need, and probably still do, to think about what on earth is going on in the crypto market and take note of how the dynamics are playing out, as Deck and Dawn have spoken about for a long time now, and give them a bit of reassurance about what might be to come and shaping your strategy accordingly. So that episode performed very, very well, and we grew off the back of that. And beyond that, of course, we had Richard Dixon Round 2 that released in December, and that was a huge conversation. It was really powerful. The short form promo from that, combined with the crossover and the audiences that Richard and I have, was always going to result in high numbers, and certainly delivered that. I'll also throw in that I think it would have been the episode after Richard, I had my episode with Scott McClure, who's another successful Scottish business guest, and that's definitely helped reach more young aspirational guys in the UK who make up a large amount of my audience anyway, so that certainly helped from that perspective too. There's probably been two other small driving factors, which I'm going to keep under wraps, and I have been sharing this with those that are enrolled in my podcast masterclass in terms of building their own show and the course that I built there. So that's going to stay under wraps for now, but there's a couple other strategies that I'm using, and it's definitely helping me, in particular on audio and Spotify. Audio, which is mainly Spotify and Apple Podcasts, although I know some of you guys will be listening on maybe Amazon or Google as well. Number four, what's an underrated networking tool that you use? Networking is such a massive skill in this day and age, and I'm probably going to speak about as this podcast goes about AI, and so many people are obsessing about what's coming down the tracks with AI. What is very unlikely for AI to be able to do is to network like a human being. So let's definitely double down on that. And for me, networking, there's a quote from Dale Carnegie that I think will definitely help people. You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in you. Now, what does that mean in reality? That means that you show a genuine interest in others. That way, you're going to find more common ground, you're going to make more connections, you're going to understand more about them. It's actually a funny way that many of my podcast guests have become friends of mine off the back of this. I've shown a real interest in doing my research, my preparation for the show. I've probed into areas of their life or topics that they particularly enjoy and want to talk about. And they really feel seen and heard. And by that, I've been interested. And through that, I become interesting because they want to understand, like, how have you got good at this? How have you managed to do this? How have you managed to support me talk about something that I didn't know I was really able to talk about? So there's a clue there. There's definitely like a trace there. As somebody that maybe shows interest in somebody else, you're going to more quickly filter for those that maybe say something that's interesting to you, and they're going to want to share more, because most people's favorite subject to talk about is themselves. So give more people the opportunity to do that. Question number five, could you run in-person events for the audience? Yes, there's no reason not to. We could certainly do a meetup, and I'm guessing it would probably be Glasgow-centric for starters, just based on my geography. And although my listeners are worldwide, I think we've been playing something like 119 countries now, which is absolutely mad. So shout out to anyone that's in one of those 119 countries that is a bit more obscure. But I've not been inundated with requests for an event. So perhaps let's start off. If I was going to do something that's community-led, I would start with something online, whether that's a Telegram, and just see the numbers of people that were actually interested to talk to other listeners online about the show and share their ideas or things they enjoy about episodes. I think that is a much more feasible plan A rather than going straight to, oh, let's have an in-person event. And if there's appetite for like a Telegram, or I don't want to do a WhatsApp, but something like that, then I will keep a close eye on my DMs after this episode and we'll see what people say. If there's volume, we can do it. If not, let's leave it for another time, maybe when there is demand. Question number six, what helps you not get too nervous before recording with big guests? The biggest difference between being nervous and excited before you do something is your level of preparation, research in advance. So the more calm I am ready to do an episode is based on the work that I've done in the days and the weeks prior to get me ready for it. And alongside that, I would always be careful about the language you use about your feelings and emotions. I've given the example before from Hannah Huseman, who was on the podcast back in February 2022. Hannah was a mental performance coach at, I think, the Texas Rangers. And she said, flip the language. So change the terminology that you're using, and your brain chemistry genuinely will respond differently. And off the back of that, so will your body. So for me, if I'm saying something like, oh, am I nervous before I interview Daniel Priestham? Am I nervous before I interview Sahil Bloom? I'm not nervous. I'm excited. I'm in an elevated state before the episodes, some more than others, definitely, just based on who the guest is and the topic or the location, and even just how well prepared and how much research I've done before, which is always really thorough, but there's certainly levels to it. But for the bigger guests, I just let that feeling sit. I'm allowed to feel elevated. I'm allowed to feel hyper-stimulated. And I'm going to try and use the increased sharpness to be hyper attentive and listen carefully, to reply quickly, to be agile, to bring things to the fore that I might not if I was maybe sitting slovenly and feeling low. It's actually a big reason, and you'll see me just now if you're watching on YouTube, I'm standing at my window ledge with my laptop and my setup and my mic in order to record this, because I just feel sharper when I stand, and I'm only speaking to me and you right now. So there's definitely a clue in that. I think I feel not nervous before podcasts, I feel excited, but I also give myself the best possible chance to perform well by doing my research and knowing broadly the things that I want to talk about, or broadly the things that are going to be the most interesting for us to talk about. And then from there, it's a natural flowing conversation wherever we may end up. Number 7, thoughts on naturally raising testosterone levels and how important test levels are. Well, for men, test levels are absolutely vital to be in a healthy range, and we are in a really troubling period for that because they're falling annually by about 1% per year. And there's a genuine fear that in like 20, 30 years, there's going to be challenges around long-term fertility for men with the levels of testosterone falling as quickly as they are. The ability to impregnate is going to fall, which is disastrous for the human race. So this actually requires a number of, initially, I would say, lifestyle interventions to tackle this decline, which is probably heavily driven by the modern environment that we're in. But I would name off the top of my head things like having adequate and quality sleep, avoiding alcohol too often or at all, maintain a healthy body weight with relatively low but not too low body fat, making sure that you're exercising and weight training. That can definitely stimulate testosterone production. And there's even some foods that are associated with improving test as well. People talk about fatty meats, and I would always talk about eggs as well. I will need to review the data, but there's talk about having eggs as your final meal before you go to bed, like 2 to 3 hours before you go to bed, actually helps you produce more testosterone overnight. I do need to look more into that, but that's a kind of bro science-y thing that I've become aware of. In terms of like naturally boosting test, it is definitely a priority for me to maintain and also increase my test if that's possible. I've got a great guest that's coming up on this. His name is Lucas Anon. He's based in Australia. It is going to be a brilliant episode. He's got some really, really good insights. And when I'm more researched for that, I'll probably be able to have more insights for you guys as well. But natural testosterone levels, yeah, absolutely vital. And there is certainly a movement towards more acceptance of testosterone replacement therapy, in particular in the US, and I think that will come to the UK as well. But in the meantime, let's try and do as much naturally as possible before there's a medical intervention. Another one kind of supplement related, do you think supplements like Athletic Greens are worth it? I haven't had Athletic Greens or AG1 as the branding is, which means that I can't comment specifically about that. It is certainly a high cost product. I think on average it's about 79 quid a month, which is pretty significant. But like anything that's health related, you need to look at it as a return on investment. If you're feeling better and it's improving your quality of life, then it might well be worth it. For example, my gym membership's like 90 to £100 a month at David Lloyd. That's pretty expensive. But if you look at where my values lie and like what I'm focused on, it's right up there. So would I say that Athletic Greens at 79 quid is worthwhile? I don't know, maybe. But personally, I've used the greens powder for over 5 years now because I certainly don't eat enough fruit and veg, and you probably don't either. And with that in mind, I want to try and make sure that I'm covering my bases when it comes to minerals, nutrients, and the kind of really important things that make you feel healthy. So my current greens powder, the one that I've been using for probably, I would say, about 8 months now, is a pineapple flavored one from Vibe. It's funny, I think a lot of you will have listened to the episode with Dr. James McElroy. He was on maybe September time, and James is super focused on the gut. And he really knows his stuff about like nutrient profiles as well. And he was saying that the Vibe recipe for their greens is arguably a better product than AG1 at a fraction of the cost, which I guess is actually a big factor for the cost of these things, is reputation and just like how well marketed that's been for such a long period of time. Whereas Vibe is a newer, fresher brand. And I actually like the taste of the Vibe one. I've had it just with water and like stirring with a spoon to have as like a pineapple drink, and it's been good. Or you can mix it in like a chocolate whey shake or whatever you choose to do to get it down. I'll also say that I've got a discount code for Vibe, so I am potentially compromised there, but I also have a discount code for MyProtein, and I use the Vibe greens rather than MyProtein greens. So take from that what you will and prioritize it accordingly. Question number 9, how to say no more effectively so you have time to focus on your own pursuits? You're sort of answering your own question before we started, that you feel that you need to say no in order to open up more time for yourself. So that should be a driver before we even get started. But in terms of the actual process for saying no, I'd much rather be direct rather than being the guy that strings someone along with no intention of actually ever attending the event or doing what they asked you to do initially. Giving someone's false hope is a really low agency and low value behavior that will not make you feel good about yourself if you reflect on how you've handled yourself. I also think terms like priority and the priority principle really matter. So we were talking there about nervous and excited. In the same way, let's think about our time and the activities we choose to do as priorities. And when you ultimately say yes to something and one activity, then you are saying no that something else to do at the same time is not a priority during the allocated time. So you have ranked the activity that you're choosing to do between 3 and 5 p.m. as a higher priority than the other option that you had at that time. So with that in mind, you need to assess, what do you believe at that moment in time is a higher priority to you? And if something isn't in line with your own ambitions, with your pursuits and what you're working towards, then you should make yourself completely comfortable with saying no. So for myself, if I look at my January, I know we're just at the start of February now, it's been incredibly busy with so many different things. My corporate job, the podcast, my podcast masterclass course, and marketing it and promoting it. And then socially, I've been really open as well to experience and making time for that. And that comes at a cost of certain other things. I still have trained. I've gone to boxing slightly less than I would have wanted to. I've managed just about once a week. But compared to a normal January, where a lot of things are normally quieter, I've actually been like quite stretched when it comes to socially. And I don't regret that whatsoever. But it's meant that it's a priority for me over something. So for example, if I can think of something I have sacrificed, and that's a really key term to have as well, priority and sacrifice. I have sacrificed practicing my golf. I've not been at the golf range since before Christmas. So that's something I've had to give up, and that's what I've chosen to say no to. I've chosen to say no to practicing my golf. And in the same way, you might be listening to this and be like, okay, what am I saying no to? It might be no to scrolling TikTok so often. It might be no to going out drinking. It might be no to going on that lad's holiday because you're focused on something else, or it might be no to going to out for dinner on Thursday because you're saving up your money. You need to consider what you're saying no to and why you're saying no to it, and it'll be an awful lot easier to say no effectively. And be polite as well, be direct, but don't lie. Don't like, oh, I'm saying no, I can't make this, and then some stupid excuse, because you'll start to become someone that's not trustworthy. Question number 10, when's your first boxing fight? I have no plans for an actual fight. I'm just enjoying the training and consistently learning. Like every single session, I'm still such a novice that I come away learning something new. And if I look at my priorities, what we were talking about in the last question, one of my biggest assets is my brain, my mind, and my ability to think and speak clearly. Getting punched during a fight and the training required to get me ready to fight well would not serve my priorities whatsoever. What will serve my priorities well is learning a new craft, improving my ability to defend myself should I have to, and getting better at something over time. That is great, but actually getting into a ring for a fight is not on the scale of things that I'm interested in doing at this moment in time. Question number 11, clearly you're very disciplined. Do you have any book recommendations on the subject? I've read lots on discipline, but not specifically like something titled about discipline. I would credit books like James Clear's Atomic Habits and Indistractable by Nir Eyal with some of the systems and the processes and habits that I have in place, as well as some of the thoughts that I have about the different triggers in my head that lead me to do particular activities or lead me to not do particular activities or particular habits. So if I have strong habits in place from things like Atomic Habits, and I understand my wiring and why I might be distracted or why I might be indistractable, like Nairiel talks about, then I also have a lot more ability to not just rely on my discipline at all times. Now, there is arguments about whether discipline or willpower are finite, and or whether these are just like almost unlimited sources that we can tap into. But I would much rather just assume that if I don't use my discipline stores too often, I'm going to be able to use my discipline when I really perhaps have to. And alongside that, in terms of books, the first 12 Rules for Life book by Jordan Peterson really reinforced my desire to be somebody that was a disciplined person, because he talks about being conscientious and how it's a really valuable and admirable trait. And I'll also think about things like Man Search for Meaning or The Forgotten Highlander, which are both books which are really, really powerful for giving you perspective about what a man is capable of dealing with and pushing on and enduring. Those are stories of just the ultimate levels of hardship. And when I think about my life, I've got it pretty easy. So in comparison, should I be concerned about what a client's going to say about a proposal? Or whether I can get a meeting with the managing director of a big firm because I'm cold calling his mobile and I'm a little bit unsure whether he's going to say yes or he's going to tell me to piss off? Or am I really getting it that difficult by going a walk in the wind and the rain in the morning? By getting up a little bit earlier than I really want to because I've got to train at 6 a.m. to go to Manchester for work? It's really not that bad. And when you think about it, it reinforces the kind of character that you want to be by doing these things that are slightly hard. In the modern age, we have it pretty easy. So I've definitely built my identity and my character as somebody that is disciplined and willing to do things which are considered moderately hard. And by that, I've managed to stand out a little bit in the kind of pretty weak society that we've got. So I haven't read something that specifically talks about discipline in its entirety for the entire 300 pages of the book, but those books together have cumulatively given me quite a good idea of what it means to live a life as somebody who's disciplined. Question 12, who will you be voting for in the election? I had a look at some of the dates that are coming up. So there's the US election this year. There is the in 2026 will be the Scottish Parliament elections, and the UK Parliament elections is not a set date yet at the time of recording, but it has to be before January 2025, so it will be sooner. I've said this on many podcasts. We actually had quite a lengthy conversation about being politically homeless with Andrew Craig in episode 200, because I'm certainly not a socialist and I don't align with the Labour Party. The Conservatives don't implement any of the small state, low tax, safe British values that I'd like them to do. And their manifesto, if you read it and it was like a label over the front of it, it's not even of a centre-right party in 2024. It's not in line with any of those libertarian values that I hold. The parties converge on a lot of the big issues that isn't in line with what the majority of the public actually feel and want, and that's why we have such a detachment with our politics at the moment. And it's pretty laughable how poor the choices are that we have. And as you can probably imagine, and you'll definitely heard when I spoke with Michael Bergson last week on the podcast, I don't like nationalism. Having studied politics at university, I can tell you from everything that I've read and everything that I've seen play out, nationalism has long been a toxic ideology. And if you've paid any attention at all to the C19 inquiry, you'll have seen how, despite the previous spin on Nicola Sturgeon as a great leader, she was a complete tyrant during that period and became incredibly dictatorial within her own party and lost all the principles of rational consensus government from probably about 2019 onwards. So I don't identify as a nationalist whatsoever, so I certainly wouldn't vote for them. I'm 99.9% sure that I will still turn up and vote, because I think it's a right that you need to exercise. But my goodness, it's a pretty hard choice to choose somebody to vote for. And quite often, I would say probably for as long as I've voted, I pretty much voted against what I don't want by voting tactically for somebody that I think would win that still isn't my ideal person. I just don't feel particularly well represented, and I don't think many of the British public do. Question number 13, how did you unwind in Dubai? Was it all work? It was certainly not all work. I was there for 3 weeks, and that meant that I worked my day job, I think 4 or 5 days. I had a lot of podcasting, But given you're there for 3 weeks, you're not quite as rushed as I've been on some other trips. I certainly packed a lot in and there were periods that were hectic, but I didn't feel like I was needing like significant time to unwind. But I certainly enjoyed myself and kind of non-podcast or work-related activities where I trained at some great gyms. I walked pretty much most days along JBR in the sunshine, which is just such a mood boost. I played golf just the once, unfortunately, but I would love to play more next time I'm there. I was out for dinner 90% of the nights I was there. Occasionally we got Deliveroo. And then kind of partying and socializing wise, I was out a good amount, although I only drank twice out of my time there. Many of you that are longtime listeners will know that I'm pretty much electively sober and I don't really drink at all in the UK. But one of the times I drank was at a boat party on a 3-story yacht with a DJ. So I definitely felt that in order to unwind and fully heighten that experience, it was a worthwhile decision. So yeah, there was lots of enjoyment while I was there. It wasn't just work. In fact, the ability to get a lot done and then enjoy myself afterwards and it not cause me any issues is one of the most attractive parts about that part of the world. Question number 14, how do you manage to optimize so many of your life when working in a 9-to-5? I don't think working in a 9-to-5 is an excuse to not optimize areas of your life. It's certainly a big chunk of your life that's taken up by that and you have less control over it because you're an employee rather than an employer. But I know many business people who own businesses but haven't optimized areas of their life because of the nature of their business taking up so much time and energy. And that's absolutely the nature of whatever it is that we're pushing and working towards. But I can honestly say I don't really see myself living in a way which doesn't prioritize the areas of life that I'm focused on at this moment in time. But that is always evolving. And there's going to be periods where other things matter more and they're more highly prioritized. But right now, I really, really have a clear view on what I care about and what I'm going to choose to spend my time on. So when I'm optimizing, it just requires planning and preparation. And with my values being really clear and what I care about, then the actions that I take off the back of those and the things that fill up my diary, they should be in line with that. And the activities that I schedule in the time box in my diary, they reflect what I'm working towards. And if I'm looking in my diary and those things don't reflect that, then I ask a serious question and then I do things like say no to things as somebody was asking earlier. It's so much easier to say no to something that doesn't fit in with your priorities when you know what your priorities are and you've got it mapped out on something written in front of you. It's a very, very important thing to do. So for example, I'm probably never going to say yes to going for a pint at the pub. I don't want to. I can't fit it in. It doesn't matter to me. I wouldn't enjoy it. But I might meet you for a Diet Coke when you're having a pint. But I'm not that fussed about maybe that location. And maybe I'd rather suggest something like a coffee or a walk or a gym session. So I see my friends for activities and those are optimized for shared values that we have. So for example, I was very social. I went to the football today at Ibrox and that ticked a social box and it ticked a football box that I was wanting to go and see anyway. But did I go to the pub afterwards? No, I came home, watched the Six Nations with my family, and now I'm here recording this because that matters to me. But in terms of my week and like optimizing, it's planned out pretty well with my non-negotiables filled in early. So things like training, work, podcasting, steps, and then the regular social things that come up all the time. So I mentioned watching Rangers there, that's weekly or sometimes bi-weekly. The sauna and catch-ups with friends there, those are known in advance. Other ad hoc things that crop up, like an invite that kind of comes out the blue, those can be found. Or equally, I was at an engagement party on Friday night and I was out for dinner before it. I knew about that weeks in advance. So everything around that was an awareness of, like, I knew that was coming and it was in the diary. And I also want to remind you that I was mentioning there about Dubai and drinking. In the UK, I think I've drank twice since 2019. So I never have to account for hangovers or the lost time that comes with that. So I really have a lot of time in my diary to optimize and do the things I want to do. The other thing that I'm going to mention is, in order for me to function well in the time that I've assigned to my tasks, there's a number of different things that I do, but I also want to say that I obviously optimize my sleep. So as much as possible, I'm trying to keep that sleep protected so that when I do turn my attention to something that I care about, I'm able to function at a relatively high level. I can tell you right now, when I've had less than 7, 8, even like if I have like 6.5 hours sleep, I'm just nowhere near as good at what I'm trying to do. I also outsource a number of things that I know that I can pay a rate which I'm comfortable with and will free me up to do the things that really matter to me. So I outsource the cleaning of the flat. I get 10 meals delivered every single week by Clean Foods to my door. And I also bundle up habits. So listening to things like podcasts or doing my guest research or having calls with friends or family while I'm walking or while I'm training or while I'm doing something that is relatively low bandwidth is really, really important. And I talked a lot about this bundling tactic on my 13 Thoughts at 31 Soul episode that I did at the end of last year. And there's an upcoming episode with Dr. Cassie Holmes where I talk a lot more about this, and I think you're going to get a lot of value from bundling as well. And many of you will already do it, but if you can turn up the amount of bundling you do, you'll probably find you can free up more time in your diary. Question number 15. Three biggest differences for someone in their 30s versus their 20s to consider when training. I guess now that I'm 31, I can answer this question in terms of what I've experienced. But first and foremost, I would say my recovery is certainly not as good as it used to be. And that's probably become apparent to me in the last 5 or 6 months. And I have added a new supplement to see if that helps, but I won't be discussing that supplement in full until I've had 4 to 6 weeks of experience of it, because I don't want to say it now and people think that it's a reason that I'm recovering well until I've actually assessed whether that's helpful. But as you age, you absolutely need to consider your recovery a lot more than you previously did. Sleep's probably the main driver, as I've just said, but I also do some hot and cold exposure, which was never a thing in my 20s whatsoever. Yes, I would maybe go to this like the sauna at Nuffield occasionally when I was a member there, but I never used it the way that I use it now. I'm at David Lloyd, and it's mainly an access and probably a knowledge thing as well. Huberman's been a big contributor to this space. But I sauna at least twice a week, and I have cold exposure at least once or twice a week, depending on what my training schedule's like, because I don't use cold post-workout, as it's been seen to blunt hypertrophy response, which is obviously a big goal of mine to grow as much muscle and to retain as much muscle as possible. But if it's pre-workout or if it's a rest day or if it's further enough away from training, I will use cold as well. And that seems to have helped my recovery and my body's ability to go hard again. Second difference between being 30 and 20 in terms of training, a lot of people online talk about the switch from focusing on aesthetics to focusing on longevity and performance. I wouldn't go as far as saying that I switched from how I look to my health entirely, but I'm certainly more conscious of my health and my ability to perform over the longer term. It remains a massive priority for me. How I feel physically and how I look physically is really important to my confidence. It's really important to how I show up. But you definitely consider, will I still be able to train and look after myself and have healthy back, healthy joints, healthy things that like my knees and my elbows when I'm older? And if my training was purely focused on aesthetics, I probably wouldn't care about that whatsoever, but I definitely am taking those into consideration. Question number 3, and here's a bit of a positive because those other two are maybe a bit grim. In your 30s versus your 20s, you actually have had more time to accrue reps and practice and move closer to mastery. If you look at the density of the muscle that I hold on my frame now, that's years and years and years of training that helps me develop the thickness of my triceps or the thickness of my quads. That's less likely to happen in my 20s because I've just had less time to do it. And this is the same for athletes or in particular sports. I'm thinking things like tennis or golf. A lot of those guys peak in their 30s because they've refined their craft, and there's absolutely no substitute for you to accumulate hours and hours and hours and reps and reps and reps. So one of the differences between your 30s and your 20s is that you probably know what works, and you probably work through some of the mistakes and the flaws in your technique or the flaws in your approach that you can now work with. And I'll also say, as an encouraging note to anyone that's an older trainee, we now have more access to quality information than before. Yes, there's loads of noise and there's loads of nonsense out there, but it's so much clearer about how to get results than it's ever been before. When I first started training, it was an absolute shit show of information. YouTube was a good resource and it saved me from things like T-Nation and Simply Shredded website. There was so much nonsense on there. Nowadays, there's still lots of noise like TikTok and like short reels that don't give any context, but there's also amazing information out there for you to understand what might actually help. So one of the biggest differences for anyone of any age group is the quality of information that we have that we can now action. Quick drink, and then question number 16. There are more questions about sales now, isn't there? Okay, question number 16. How well has your sales experience in your day job crossed over? the crossover to the podcast from my sales ability has been huge. There's been a number of factors that it's genuinely helped me grow the show to an extent that would never have been possible if I didn't have this background. And the number one reason I would think is my ability to contact and book guests and like find their contact details and write something compelling for them to want to come on the show has been a game changer. And it's exactly what I do when it comes to booking meetings with a decision maker in a business that I want to sell furniture to. It's so, so valuable. Alongside that, I got a lot of practice in one of my insurance roles when I was at Marsh, talking and researching for who I was going to speak to. So looking through their website, their company accounts, their social media. I do the exact same when I'm prepping for guests, whether that's reading their blogs, their books, their social media, whatever else it is, listening to previous interviews they've done. That ability to research really diligently, take notes, but more importantly, in a sales role, I have funneling questions. So I have questions I'm always asking the different buyers that I'm working with to understand how I can move them to a position where they're going to say some of the things that I want to hear or some of the things that I need to understand in order to move forward. So for me, it's the exact same in podcasting. I have questions and a set of things that I know that I'm roughly going to want to ask, and I'm well prepared for the different responses and directions and avenues that it could go in based on the research or the topic that we're going to talk about. And I'm also completely open to going wherever they are interested in going. And that's the same in a sales meeting. The other thing that I'll talk about is marketing and promoting. So like gathering things like social proof and feedback. That's something that I use all the time in sales to show the value of my offering. Well, guess what? When it comes to having a top 1% global podcast or marketing like that, or feedback from guests who've enjoyed being on the show, or feedback from listeners where they share a written review on Apple Podcasts or they comment on YouTube, best believe I'm really good at harvesting that, using it to drive and shape my approach, but also to share with upcoming guests, but also to share with potential listeners as well that the show is worth their time. And that is all just sales. So I really believe that my sales skill set has been one of the vital factors in me achieving what I have in the podcast space that I don't think anyone else would have achieved by this stage, this number of reps in, unless they've got like huge redeeming features. So whether that's a pre-existing audience from Instagram or YouTube that they've funneled over towards their podcast, or they've got a big budget to do lots of really high profile in-person stuff, or they're paying some of the top guests to come on, which is like a hand up that's not possible for everyone. Number 17, top three qualities a man needs to consistently grow. Well, consistent growth is certainly something that we're after. We're not after that boom and bust cycle. Firstly, you have to have clarity on what you want to grow towards. If you are just aimlessly wanting to grow, that can be a problem. And I know there's been times in my life where I've just pushed forward in what I believe to be a positive direction without necessarily having a set end goal in sight. And I feel I have a natural disposition that can be an advantage sometimes towards just working and being relentless. However, I can tell you that I definitely now advocate for clearly understanding what you're aiming at. What is the North Star? What do I want to move towards? And then from there, you can understand what the work that you need to do, basically what needs to fill the gap, what reps do I need to do, what activities I need to do, what work do I need to do to get towards that. And with that in mind, you definitely need to set targets. You need to have goals. You need to have visions. I'm going to say the word purpose because that is so important. So as somebody to consistently grow, you need to have a purpose that you're working towards. So whatever term you want to use, you want to visualize, you want to write down, you want to know what you're growing towards and what you're aiming at. Growth for the sake of it can help, and it has certainly paid off for me to some extent, but I'm also now working on having greater clarity to really unlock the value of knowing the goals and the aims. I said to Michael Bergson on the last episode, that's one of the fundamental things is when you understand your why, you can bear almost any how. So if your why is so strong, the days where it's absolutely brutal, you're going to consistently do the work. And that's actually number two that I want to talk about. Willingness to do the work, even when you don't feel like it, is one of the most important qualities. Resilience and consistency. Over and over and over again, even when it's not immediately gratifying, and that's one of the key points. A reliable nature to your character and your ability to show up when it counts is always going to pay off. It cannot not pay off. So one of the best qualities that someone can have is understanding and taking action on the fact that they maybe don't feel like it that day. So many of the things that bring you short-term discomfort or pain or don't feel like you really want to do right now, those are the things that you need to understand are going to lead to longer-term gratification, longer-term freedom, longer-term success, and longer-term growth. Last and certainly by no means least, strong communication. I think a major quality you need to have to consistently grow is your ability to communicate. So your ability to convey your ideas, to talk about your values, and to get your message out there to others is going to help them buy into you and either help and achieve you support or achieve and support you in those goals, or at least they're not going to get in your way. So if somebody understands you or appreciates what you're going to do and you've communicated that to them well, they're going to get behind you. They're going to push you forward, or at least they're not going to stand there as a roadblock. People talk a lot about AI, and I mentioned this early in the podcast. One of the things that can make you, I'm going to say, quote unquote, AI proof for the future is those that can speak and write well are still going to be valued in an AI-centric world, because it's a skill that the robots are less likely to be able to master at the same speed that they're mastering some of the other things that we're going to talk about. I really, really think that if you're able to communicate well, be attentive, and feel like somebody and make somebody feel heard and listened to and seen, and then communicate your ideas and bring them on the journey with you, that's going to be a massive quality for you consistently moving in the right direction. Number 18, best piece of advice given by a podcast guest. There is no way I'm picking just one right now, but something that is, like, in terms of recency bias, this is an episode that I recorded in Dubai with Daniel Priestley. I cannot stop thinking about this, because he spoke about, and this is really helpful for those of you that are in a full-time job or considering like what side project you could run, or if you've maybe got a business just now and you're considering another product or service that you might want to offer as well. He basically said, instead of building a full business plan, talking to suppliers or manufacturers or even producing a sample product or building out like an entire service, what you should do is create a waiting list to assess the demand. Now, there's different ways you can create the waiting list. He recommends his company Score app, of course he does, and it's a great way to do it. But if you create a waiting list for a product or a service and people join it, you have a fledgling business, you have customers, you have potential people who are interested in what you want to sell. Now, don't get me wrong, you don't exactly know the price point yet or what the profitability will be or anything like that. But once you have a waiting list of customers, you've been able to assess whether a business idea is even remotely valid. And it's something that he said to me after recording. So many people will invest a lot of fiscal capital in assessing whether an idea is a possibility before they've even spoken to the market. You need to understand if your market is willing or interested in what you're going to be selling. So that's absolutely massive. Question number 19, your main focus for 2024. In 2024, I've got to focus on executing to the highest standard in the areas that I've chosen to focus on and those that I really care about. For me, that's mainly going to be my sales career. That's going to be the podcast. That's going to be my training and my nutrition. That's going to be creating an additional revenue stream for myself. And it's going to be being present in the time that I spend with friends and family. That's my main focus. Look, everything that I'm doing and that I really, really want to focus on is within those realms. There's nothing that's outside of that. If you mention something else and I say yes to it, tell me off, because I shouldn't be caring about it. Question number 20, what are three things you can't live without? This was a great question. This was from one of the Ritchie twins. This is from Jack Ritchie. And they asked me a very similar question on their podcast, which I appeared on in January, which was great fun. I know a lot of you went across and listened to that and enjoyed it. I got a lot of feedback from it. So this was a great question from Jack. Number one, I cannot live without training and moving my body. It's so fundamental to how I feel on a daily basis. And one of the biggest contributions I think Andrew Huberman has made to the space is the mind follows the body. So when I'm training well, when I'm feeling my body well, when I move in the morning before work and I go for a walk, when it's pouring rain, I go at my walk and I come back and I just feel like more alive and more ready to contribute towards the things that I'm going to be doing that day. That's vital. So that's definitely something I can't live without. Number two, I cannot live without having conversations that interest me. And it just so happens there's a side benefit that I get to record those and I get to share them with you guys, and it has a positive ripple effect off the back of it in terms of the people that get to listen. Those conversations are things that I just really look forward to. And if that changed now, I wouldn't live the same quality of life that I have now in terms of my excitement for the activities that I do and my excitement for the work that I am undertaking. And number three is I couldn't live without the opportunity to give genuine support, but also to receive genuine support from the people that I care about. That is so important to me, to have people in my corner pushing me in the right direction, but also to feel like I'm contributing positively to their life as well. That's something that gives me a real sense of purpose, and I really, really think that that matters. Quick drink, and we'll go into the last few questions. This was interesting. Question 21. Top three favorite podcast episodes from other shows you've listened to. I am a voracious podcast listener, and there's definitely going to be a recency bias on this, but I've tried to pick one recent episode that I've listened to and two that are kind of like all-time favorites of mine, but it was hard to whittle this down. But the first one I'm going to say is I listened to Scott Galloway's episode on Modern Wisdom. He has been on twice, but the one in December 2023, so the most recent one, was titled Your Life Can Be So Much Better Than You Think. And that title straight away is something that, like, I'm all about, the empowerment of you moving your life in the right direction, your ability to get towards the end of the light of the tunnel. And the conversation was incredibly empowering. And some of the really deep insights were on things like relationships and like dating dynamics, the quality of masculine role models in 2024 moving forward, and also some advice on like aging gracefully and understanding what that brings with it in a positive light. So yeah, I would say Scott Galloway is one of my favorites. Second one, I'm going to go much further back than that, and it's going to be Elon Musk on Joe Rogan. Now, Musk has been on Rogan three times now, but the time that I enjoyed the most was his first appearance, and this was back in September 2018. Many of you nowadays will know Musk as the guy that's so loud and out there on X because he owns it and he's very clear in his opinions, and he has really stepped up and pushed back against a lot of the globalist narrative, which many of us that listen to a podcast like this one will disagree with. But back then, he was a lot less public, and there's an infamous photo and video from that podcast where he's smoking a joint with Rogan. Of course, that was funny, and that was like an iconic moment within that podcast. But on a deeper level, the way that Joe Rogan unlocked so much from someone like Musk, who previously wasn't, he was pretty publicly guarded. He wasn't tweeting out his opinions all the time. He was like, you really got to see inside his mind. And to hear someone that's that clever just speak about concept, like he really went deep on Tesla in that episode, and I really like understood it a lot more. And many, like, I didn't know before I listened to that, that he was one of the founders of PayPal, and he was a huge part of that organization. And PayPal has gone on to be a very important structure within the financial world. So yeah, I love that episode, and it's definitely in my top three. And third, I'm going to pick an episode that has to feature someone that's had a massive influence on my life, and that is Jordan Peterson. It could certainly be one of the episodes that he's done on Rogan, but I'm going to be biased here, and I'm going to pick another Modern Wisdom episode. And this one was titled The Keys to Growth, Emotional Resilience, and Finding Purpose. Chris had hosted Jordan Peterson in 2021, and this episode was recorded the year after in 2022, and it was an amazing conversation as well, because they really went deep on, the title is Finding Purpose, but what they talked about in terms of finding purpose will stay with me, and it was like, I think it was like 2.5 hours, and I remember going for a walk, playing it on 1.5x speed, because that's what we do, and I'm sure many of you listening to this will be listening to me in 1.5. When you basically put your phone in your pocket and you just walk for like an hour, and I remember looking at my phone and being like, right, it's time for me to start work, but I really just want to listen to the rest of this episode, and I've listened back multiple times as well. That's a sign of a really good episode and one that's had a profound impact on you. And hearing those two in full flow and knowing that Chris was a fan of Jordan's for many years, used 12 Rules for Life, the first book, and I think he wrote down his like the 40 rules that he had on Quora back in the day as well, and how fundamental that was for him in shaping the man that he became. Seeing him interact with him and Jordan like taking interest in Chris's life and giving like really specific examples, I think that was, yeah, it was an incredible episode, and it certainly touches me. Number 22. Oh, this is a great question. And this is something maybe we should all ask ourselves. What would you tell yourself 1 year ago, 5 years ago, and 10 years ago? That's a good spacing, because 10 years ago was such a long time ago, and 5 years ago feels like a long time ago, but it's not. But let's go. I don't know where to answer this seriously. Okay, 1 year ago, I wish I'd bought more Bitcoin when it was at 17K. That would have been a fucking good idea considering it's like 40 odd just now and it's going to go to beyond that. But in all seriousness, I certainly financially would have told myself to buy Bitcoin at all of those different points in my life. Like 10 years ago, I don't even know what Bitcoin would be worth. 5 years ago, it was definitely worth less than a couple thousand. But anyway, 1 year ago, I would have said to myself, do more podcast tours than just the one that you did to Dubai. Launch the podcast masterclass sooner and also work on a wider appeal course and a way of working with me. That's something that I'm focusing on in 2024. So of course I would have told myself that in January 2023 and pushed myself towards that. But now that I know that, it's great that I'm going to work on it. 5 years ago, of course I would have bought Bitcoin, but I would tell myself to move industry from insurance into furniture or another industry that allowed me to sell or sell high value products sooner. Start the podcast before 2020 because 5 years ago would be 2019. So I would push myself towards that. And I would also tell myself to be open to experience and to explore a little bit more in different areas to add my life experiences. 10 years ago would have been 2014. I would tell myself sales is a great vehicle for you. Double down, keep learning, move companies sooner, and get more sales training from genuine experts in the B2B space and like actively seek that, like really seek that and listen to more of that. I would have told myself to start creating content sooner. I only started posting on Instagram in 2017 when I kind of overcame some inertia and some feelings of like feeling like I wasn't capable of doing that, but put myself out there far sooner and get better at doing that. I wouldn't necessarily say start the podcast in 2014. One, I probably wasn't ready. Two, the technology probably wasn't there for me to do it properly. And maybe I would have done it and got burnt and fallen off and not built what I've done now. But I think by 2019, I was certainly ready. And I should have started it before 2020. But 10 years ago, I would have told myself to get myself out there and to create more content. Number 23, you said you want to grow over lots of platforms. I'd love to hear how you plan to do this. We've just hit some really cool milestones. So 16,000 on Instagram now, which is great. YouTube is finally going over 1,000 subs. So thank you to everyone that's been pushing me on there and commenting and liking videos and sharing it with friends. Apple Podcasts and Spotify, which are my main two platforms, are up over 20%, which is really rewarding as they were already developed podcasts, so like platforms, like people were already like they're in good numbers. So 20% was not insignificant. So that was great to see. And then LinkedIn is probably the last one of note to mention. And off the back of the episode with Michael Bergson, who has a really strong LinkedIn audience, I've had a lot more connections and conversations than there. So that's been really great. And LinkedIn is a really good source of engaged, passionate listeners who are interested in the types of topics that I talk about. So it's a cool place to hang around. I also do have a TikTok and it has grown, but my God, it's an absolute sewer. And some of the comment sections make me wonder whether society is headed to hell in a handbasket. I would say that four platforms is a lot to consider myself growing on, because I feel if I started something like Threads or if I took Twitter really seriously, I do have a Twitter, but it's not very active. I think I would be too stretched because a lot of the platforms that I'm planning on growing on, the podcast, YouTube are both the same content. Instagram is primarily content from the podcast and LinkedIn is primarily content from the podcast plus some written stuff and some photos. That's like a lot of that feeds itself rather than me doing something else. I will give a word for my email list, which I would love to grow more because it's probably a quarter as active as I want it to be. Because I really feel I could deliver value in that space. Because I feel like my writing communication skills are good and I actually enjoy it when I get into the flow of it, but it's just a time thing. And we mentioned priorities earlier in the podcast. My priority is the show, it's my sales career, it's spending time with friends and family. If I add in the email list on top of it, maybe I'm going to be too stretched, but maybe somebody will give me a telling off in the DMs after this and encourage me, which would be good. But I certainly think in terms of plans for growth, I'm just going to keep being as relentlessly consistent as possible, repurpose the content that I've got on one platform elsewhere. So a 60-minute podcast episode becomes three short clips. It could become one email or three posts about the particular topic that's from those clips or the main themes from the episode. And that all kind of feeds itself as well. The other thing that I could do for the email list and is a point of note is I could create some sort of extra free value that you would get for every new subscriber. So if somebody subscribes, they would be sent, for example, the major lessons from a set number of podcasts. So it could be 20 lessons from 200 podcasts, or it could be 5 ways to improve your own podcast if you've got one, or it could be 5 ways to get back more of your time, or if we're talking about sales, it could be 3 tips for better sales in 2024 when you join my email list. So that's certainly something that's a consideration for doing. And the only other thing I'll talk about in terms of growing is I think when I collaborate with guests, the guest type of audience will matter. So I mentioned the Richard episode in December did really well. Last week's episode with Michael and the week before Sam Kavanagh, that episode did really, really well because our audiences had a lot of crossover in terms of the types of topic that I talk about and the types of topic that their audience are interested in. So they stuck around because they looked at the archive and they went, wow, I'm probably going to listen to more of this. I enjoyed this episode. I'm going to stay because, oh, he's had on such and such, or he's had on such and such, or he's talked about this topic. I'm going to stay. So while you're going to continue to see episodes where I talk to people who are experts in a field, so perhaps you're going to hear an author like David Robson's coming on about the expectation effect, Cathy Holmes is talking about time and happiness, those guys don't necessarily drive an increase in subscribers because they don't have a massive audience as authors. They drive a lot of value for you, the listener, and you might share it with a friend, which is very helpful and very important. But having guests that have an audience that have a big crossover is very important as well. And making sure that the guests are excited and happy with the quality of the conversation we've had, which I think I can bank on, but also producing high quality promotional clips and promo that the guest is happy to share is vital as well. And I've got a team in place which is going to continue to do that. I think if you look at the short form clips, the thumbnails and the artwork that has been produced over the last 6 months, there's been a real step up in quality, and that's been a big factor in growth, and it's going to be a big factor in moving forward too. Oh, we're getting deep for question 24. On your deathbed, reflecting on life, what will matter to you most that you did with your life? I absolutely want to live a life that's in line with the values that I hold at this moment in time and in the future. I want to have felt fulfillment. I want to have felt purpose in the activities that I've done. I want to have helped and supported those that I care about around me. And I want to have enabled them to live a great life together with me. If I'm on my deathbed and I've done all those things, then I can feel that I've lived my life in a proper way, and that will matter deeply to me to feel like I've explored my potential and helped others around me to explore their potential as well. Number 25, when was the last time you were moved on the podcast? I mentioned Cathy Holmes. There's an unreleased episode with her that's coming soon, and that was recorded on a fairly emotional day for me. And we spoke about mortality on that episode when it was right at the front and center of my mind on that particular day. And you'll hear that episode very soon. And I was definitely moved by that. I didn't cry, but I was visibly emotional about that particular topic. The other time I can think of was I was very moved when I spoke with David McIntosh back on episode 218. We were speaking about grief and the passing of his mother, a very premature passing of his mother. I've had so many messages about that particular discussion in that conversation. We pulled a clip from it as well, and David had a lot of messages about it as well, because David had a rallying call for everyone that us self-development types should absolutely delay gratification in all areas of life except for one, and that one area is quality time with family and loved ones. He explained during the episode that he had delayed a number of times and a number of opportunities to spend time with his mum in service of working towards this dream trip of taking his mum to New York for her 60th birthday. And that 60th birthday never came. And that was a painful experience for him because he said that he would happily have had another night sitting on the couch watching TV or taking her to the local Costa and Air over the trip to New York because of the nature of losing her. So I really, really think that that was a stark reminder, and I was really, really moved by that, because for those of us that are focused on hard work and moving forward and getting more and opening up opportunities for ourselves and those around us, we still need to take time to spend quality, focused, present time with our loved ones. And that, yeah, that visibly moved me, and it stayed with me since. And based on what many of you have said to me over message and email, I think it's hit a lot of you as well. And a similar question, but slightly different. When was the last time you were surprised on the podcast? I think my two-hour episode with Sam Cav was surprising by how deep we managed to go on the topic of religion and faith. Because as we dug deeper, I was just trying to understand more and more and more how Christian values relate to the challenges we see in modern society. And I really had to be attuned to understand the full depth of what Sam was saying and the gravity of what it means in order for me to ask a follow-up question for both me to understand, but also for the listener to understand where we were going with that. And in order for me to find more clarity, obviously I was surprised the further and further we dug and the deeper we went, just where we were going. And I think that was valuable, to be surprised by what I was learning, because while I'm always well prepared for conversations, I should learn new things during those as well. Beyond that, in the episode, Sam also spoke about the volatility of trading as an income. And it surprised me the importance that he placed on having multiple revenue streams. But also, if you look back at the start of his trading career, Sam had built this very niche business. And if you haven't listened to the episode, you should definitely go back and listen to that part of the conversation in particular, because the ability for him to earn good revenue in another business took some of the pressure off his need to be a profitable trader immediately off the bat. Now, nowadays he has methods and he has a focus which allows him to be more consistent and to understand that. But even now he says that month to month, it's you cannot guarantee how the market's going to behave and how your strategy is going to respond to it. But he has something over time he's confident with. But his value that he placed in having another income to feed the trading and to give him time in the market to improve and really get his strategy honed was really important as well. And that surprised me, because I think you hear a lot of these guys talk about trading or financial markets, and they kind of push you to think it's the be all and the end all. But while Sam is an expert professional trader, he also acknowledges it's very important to recognize other revenue streams to give you some form of stability. So question 27, second last question. What's the biggest challenge you're facing in 2024? I think this is the biggest challenge facing most people in 24. And that is, we have a finite amount of time and you have to use the time that you have wisely. I feel that on a personal level, I'm at a pivotal stage in so many years of my life where a lot of the foundations I built over the last 3, 4, 5 years that have been really positive, they're in place and they're laid. And the next moves that I use to build on top of those, those moves need to be executed at the best possible quality and the best possible level to maximize the opportunities that are available to me. So the biggest challenge I have in 2024 is the amount of time that I've got and where my attention goes and the quality of the activities that I do and the quality of the execution of those actions is absolutely vital. So the biggest challenge I've got is making sure that I do things to the best of my ability when I do them. Question 28 is a cool one to finish on, and it's my financial investments for 2024. There are three main asset classes that I'm investing in. One's new, so I'm going to share that one first. And that is, I have bought 2 lots in a cask of whiskey. Now, I've never invested in whiskey before, but in short, what I've done is I've bought 2 lots at a set price that's got an agreed rate of return of 15% once all of the cask has been sold when it's released. And based on previous forecasts, that should be sold within 12 to 24 months and a return of 15%. So I don't have a huge exposure to this, but I have a sum of money that's in it that's invested that I want to talk about. And I was just keen to test the water, understand what the process would look like. And 15% is not to be sniffed at, especially if I become more confident with this. Then I can go in heavier, and 15% of a bigger amount, as we were speaking about with Nick Majuli, is a lot more important than 15% of a smaller amount. So that's the first asset class. The second financial investment is my heaviest allocation out of my investing, and that is across a few different funds on Vanguard and Hargreaves Lansdown. And those are in funds or trackers, namely a global equities fund, an S&P 500, and I am also in another fund which is a split 80% equities and 20% bonds. Bonds have performed atrociously in my portfolio over the last 5 years in all my previous investments. And those that have listened to me speak to the likes of Pete Matthew, Damien Talks Money, Andy Hart, Andrew Craig, all these financial experts will know that bonds has actually been viewed in the past as a defensive, a conservative asset for growing wealth slowly and safely. But that's not been the case at all for me. So you'll see that my equities fund is 100% equities. The S&P 500 is 100% equities. And then I have a very small allocation to bonds in this other fund. And I'm still the vast majority equities because at this age, you should have a willingness to be, well, I have a willingness to be more exposed to equities than I do to bonds. But I actually previously had more bonds in a different fund that performed really, really badly because that's just what I thought was the right thing to do because I was being conservative with a small C and that was actually turned out to not be conservative and turned out to have a poor performance and actually lose money in that fund, which is challenging. But finally, and many of you know this, my third asset class I invest in is crypto and I hold 4 coins and this is the order in which I hold them in terms of amount and value of those coins. I hold Bitcoin, I hold Borg, which is Swissborg's native token. I hold XRP and I hold Ethereum. In terms of how that's performing, I'm significantly up on my Bitcoin holding. I'm slightly down on Borg at this moment in time because it's had an all-time high of just over, well, well over a dollar and it's down around 17 cents at the time of recording. But that's a long-term play and I'm quite comfortable with that and I'm averaging in to get that down so when it pumps, I'll be smiling. I am roughly level on XRP. I think it's sitting around 53 cent at the time of recording and my average buy is somewhere around there as well. When it was at 83 cent in July, I was heavily in profit. So that's a very promising state of affairs. And last but not least, I'm slightly up on Ethereum. So I feel like I'm well positioned for when the bull market comes. But on all of those investments, apart from the whiskey, which was a one-time investment, waiting for that return, I am investing regularly in those funds and I'm investing regularly in those crypto coins as well to get what I would call a smoothing effect across the board. But we've gone for just over an hour and 9 minutes. It's been another solo Q&A with 27 great questions from you guys. Thank you so much for your support for the show. We are growing in the right direction. If there's an episode you've listened to in the last 10, 15, 20 that you've really enjoyed, please take the time to share it with a friend, pop it into a group chat, get it out there because that is the number one way that the show continues to move in the right direction. And I appreciate the hell out of you guys. I've got some amazing episodes coming for you very, very soon. And I'll be back to speak to you all again then.